It's time for your KDNK local newscast for this Tuesday morning, March 21st. I'm Gavin Dahl, live from the heart of Carbondale's Creative District. This morning, we're digging into some of the current issues at the state capitol. First up, the education beat. State lawmakers want to curb the suspension rate among young children in preschool through third grade. A bipartisan measure to address the issue is making its way through the State House. Rocky Mountain Community Radio reporter Benta Berkland has more.
Freshman lawmaker Democratic Representative James Coleman of Denver says last year alone there were 7,000 suspensions for young school children. And he says children of color are suspended significantly more than their white peers.
So it's happening that many times. That child feels as if this is who they are. The child is not in class those days and then they're not learning, so that sets them back academically. And so I think long term it can have really negative effects.
Something he knows firsthand. Coleman says he was expelled in first grade, and then in fifth grade, he was kicked out of three different schools. House Bill 1211 would provide training and resources to help teachers come up with alternatives to suspension. I'm Benta Berkland at the State Capitol.
According to nonprofit education news outlet Chalkbeat Colorado, three proposed bills at the state capitol this year could help rural school districts having a hard time finding qualified teachers. Ideas include changing processes for teacher licensure, adjusting how retired teachers can get back in the classroom, and by looking broadly at why teachers are leaving the profession, many after just a few years in the classroom, trying to make policy that will end that trend. Meanwhile, a bill scheduled in committee this week would change how the distance is measured from a school to where oil and gas wells can be set up. More on that later in the week. A new bill that would make it easier, at least on paper, to officially change your gender is facing an uphill battle in the Colorado State Senate. Eric Gladys has more.
The Birth Certificate Modernization Act cleared the House with bipartisan support last week, but now it faces an uphill battle after being assigned to the Senate's unofficial kill committee. The new law would streamline the process for changing the gender listed on birth certificates. Laura Reinch with One Colorado says when a person's gender doesn't match their birth certificate, they can lose housing, a job, and even the right to vote.
And this bill will just make it so that transgender people can live their lives the way that they choose, which I think is a Colorado value. We believe in personal freedom and being able to live a life you want. And this bill will help transgender people be able to live a life free from discrimination.
Reinch notes under the current law, a transgender person must undergo surgery and appear before a judge to prove their identity. House Bill 1122 would only require a note from a health professional supporting the change. Two previous attempts to update the state's rules did not clear the Senate, where some opponents have said the move could lead to fraud or identity theft. Reinch notes the bill would put Colorado in sync with current federal policies for updating the gender on a passport or Social Security card.
Federal government uses this process that the bill would put in place for folks to update the gender on their passport or Social Security card. So if there were real valid concerns about fraud, the federal government and all these other states would not be using this process.
Reinch says her group and others will be contacting members of the Senate's State Veterans and Military Affairs Committee, urging them to give the bill a fair hearing. This is Eric Gladys reporting for KDNK.
Colorado's latest revenue forecast shows that state lawmakers have to fill a larger budget gap than anticipated. Benta Berkland talks to other State House reporters about what this could mean for the budget and transportation funding in this week's Capitol Conversation.
I'm here with Kristen Wyatt, a reporter with the Associated Press, and Peter Marcus with ColoradoPolitics.com. Peter, we had a budget shortfall going into this session. It's widened. What are the figures showing?
Yeah, so the quarterly revenue forecast, the one that lawmakers will base their budget writing off of, so this is the big one. They did not get the luck of the Irish St. Paddy's Day message that they were looking for. It looks like it's about, could be as much as $200 million more to fill that shortfall than they were thinking. They were operating under the premise that it was going to be about $500 to $600 million shortfall. It looks like we're going to be closer to $700 million, according to the governor's office take on what the projections will look like. They're going to have some really tough decisions ahead of them. From what I've been hearing, some of the magic metrics that they had been using in years past to come up with this money, with Senator Pat Steadman being on the Joint Budget Committee, he somehow always came up with these things. They have not been finding those same rabbits in the hat this year.
Pat Steadman is term limited, so he's not on the budget committee. Another big budgetary related item will be heard in committee in the next few days. It's a broad bipartisan transportation funding measure that would go to voters in the fall. Kristen, do you think this budget shortfall may play into that debate?
Absolutely. In a way, this could help that measure. This is a big funding bill coming through the House for its first review Wednesday. When times are bad, this can be an easier time. There are Republicans who are going to oppose this bill because it hikes sales taxes. However, it's genuine among many Republicans to say, we don't oppose all tax increases. We oppose increasing taxes without asking voters. So this could actually help that bill pass to say, look, we've got needs here. We know we've got roads that are a mess. You have even leading Republicans saying, I hate the roads. I drive over. I've ruined all my trucks on these terrible roads. And maybe this revenue forecast picture that times are not as good as some hope could help pass that bill.
How does what's happening federally with proposed budgets impact the state?
Yeah, so that's the best part about this whole thing, is that they could go through the trouble, come up with the money that they need to balance this budget, pass it after all the debate and all the work, and then find out that the federal government, that the budget is going to strip Medicaid money or any other number of things. And then all of a sudden our budget is in flux again, and the governor could be potentially looking to call a special session over the summer, have lawmakers come back and figure out a way how to balance it.
Nobody ever wants to come back for a special session, but if the U.S. House and the Congress pass a bill that strips Medicaid immediately instead of waiting till 2020, we will have no choice. We'll have to be back here at the Capitol this year.
It will be tricky when we have a split legislature. We are a state that has the Medicaid expansion. Governor Hickenlooper and Democrats have said in no way do they plan to roll that back, but we do have to get something through a Republican Senate, and it's unclear how they'd feel.
The only thing Republicans and Democrats agree about here seems to be that we cannot on our own afford to expand Medicaid availability to more folks. That means we'd have to get rid of it. Unfortunately, our Medicaid eligibility is a law. It's in statute. So we can't do it without the legislature coming back. So if any big changes happen to Medicaid, everybody has to come back to Denver to fix that.
Thanks. That was Kristen Wyatt with the Associated Press, Peter Marcus with ColoradoPolitics.com. I'm Benta Berkland, and this is Capital Conversation.
This is KDNK. Judge Neil Gorsuch, who testified before Congress yesterday for a possible seat on the U.S. Supreme Court, has a history of ruling against students with disabilities. Eric Galatis reports.
According to two new reports, Judge Neil Gorsuch, President Trump's nominee for the Supreme Court, has repeatedly failed to protect the rights of students with disabilities. National Education Association President Lily Eskelson Garcia, who taught students with special needs during her 20-year classroom career, says everyone should be concerned by the trend in Gorsuch's record.
He's endorsed the lowest expectation for students with disabilities, and he's allowed schools to provide our highest need students with the bare minimum of an educational benefit.
Reports from the NEA and the Bazelon Center for Mental Health Law point to one case as an example where an autistic student's progress was dramatically reversed after switching schools. The parents sued the second school district, but Gorsuch sided with the district, ruling the student was only entitled to make progress that was slightly above the lowest possible standard. Mark Murphy with the Bazelon Center says Gorsuch's de minimis or minimum standards rulings show Gorsuch is not sensitive to or doesn't understand the legal rights of people with disabilities.
It really reflects really low expectations for kids with disabilities. I think it's fair to say that no parent of a child without a disability would be happy if the school district said that they only had to provide a de minimis level of education for them.
Garcia adds, while parents and civil rights advocates rely on rules designed to end abusive practices, she says Gorsuch seems to have an antagonistic view toward agencies charged with protecting kids at risk.
Why wouldn't you want to be on a parent's side when they say, we know what benefits our children because we saw it in this school and we're not getting it in the second school? Why wouldn't you be on the side of parents?
The reports also show Gorsuch's rulings have allowed schools to use force and to isolate students with disabilities, despite studies showing that these students, especially students of color, are disproportionately subjected to the practice in schools. For KDNK, I'm Eric Galatis.
Over 400,000 parents, grandparents, teachers, and allies have signed petitions to Congress to save PBS Kids and stop Donald Trump's plans to cut funding for the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and PBS. Today, organizers are going to bring their kids to the U.S. Senate, deliver the over 400,000 signatures with cameras in tow, and make sure Congress hears their message to protect public media. U.S. Senator Michael Bennett spoke at five town halls last week in Colorado Springs, Alamosa, Pueblo, Durango, and Grand Junction. He encouraged Coloradans to, quote, keep it coming and continue speaking up, adding, quote, your phone calls are making a difference. Your postcards are making a difference. Showing up is making a difference. People who have been in Congress for 30 years have told me they've never seen anything like this. I think that's going to give us the chance to change our politics in ways that can create more opportunity for the generations that come after. Senator Cory Gardner, who introduced Judge Gorsuch yesterday, has not faced constituents at a single in-person town hall in 2017. Congressman Scott Tipton hasn't either. Town of Carbondale Public Works Department has closed 3rd Street downtown to vehicle and pedestrian access for streetscape improvements. New sidewalks, street lighting, ditch construction, curbs, and irrigation upgrades are all part of the project, which should be completed by Memorial Day. Crews are working on the new 6th and Laurel roundabout in Glenwood. Lane closures from exit 116 I-70 interchange to Pine Street are possible until 3 o'clock today. And eastbound and westbound I-70 approaching Glenwood Springs exit 116 are reduced to single lanes. The city of Glenwood Springs will be holding this year's annual spring cleanup event, April 17th through May 5th. The city invites residents within city limits to have non-hazardous debris and recyclable materials removed by zone. Zone 1 pickup is scheduled for April 17th. But city crews will only make one trip through each neighborhood, so it's important that all items are placed in the street in front of each residence by 7 a.m. on the first day of cleanup. However, don't set things out too early. This year, a new ordinance is in effect prohibiting debris any earlier than 2 calendar days before your assigned day. You can get more info at 384-6379. That's 384-6379. The city accepts one pickup truckload of non-hazardous debris and recyclable materials per residence, but won't accept hazardous materials, including paint, antifreeze or gas, tires, waste motor oil, televisions, computers or copiers, batteries, air cylinders, or gas tanks. There will be a separate household hazardous waste collection day on April 22nd. The Upper Colorado River Interagency Fire and Aviation Management Unit is preparing to conduct several prescribed burns on White River National Forest and Bureau of Land Management lands in Eagle, Garfield, Pitkin, and Rio Blanco counties, weather and conditions permitting. Burns are implemented to improve habitat for big game and other native wildlife and help clear overcrowded undergrowth that poses a wildfire risk. Nutrient-rich new growth can often be seen sprouting as soon as 10 days after a prescribed fire. A secondary benefit of these projects will be the reduction of fuel loads in the mountain shrub and oak brush vegetation in areas that are overgrown. Burn plans for prescribed burn activities are prepared and approved months in advance by fuel specialists. Last year, firefighters burned over 4,000 acres of prescribed burn and slash piles on White River National Forest and BLM lands. This year's potential prescribed burn locations include about 500 acres at Avalanche Prescribed Burn, 9 miles south of Carbondale, east of Highway 133, about 1,000 acres at Cattle Creek Prescribed Burn, 7 miles north of Basalt, northeast of 82, approximately 1,500 acres at Battlements Prescribed Burn, 9 miles southwest of Parachute, upwards of 2,000 acres at West Divide Prescribed Burn, 14 miles south of Silt, and 240 acres at Sheep Gulch Prescribed Burn, 4 miles north of Gypsum, plus two more burns near Meeker. The public is reminded, this is important, do not call 911 or emergency services, even though smoke may be visible.